So air travel, it has definitely been affected by COVID. But now that COVID is hopefully slash supposedly going away, how is air travel recovering from this? Well, on the line, we have a gentleman named Jay Ratliff, and he is an aviation expert. Jay, welcome. Good morning. Welcome back to the morning show.
Pleasant. Good morning to you, and thrilled to be here. Thank you.
So if you could first kind of reintroduce yourself to our audience. In other words, how did you, Jay Ratliff, become an expert on the aviation business?
Well, I spent a better part of 2.5 decades in the airline industry and in airline management. It was 30 years ago in February that I began offering travel tips and different types of advice on a radio station in Cincinnati. And it kind of built from there, and I started being used by more radio stations, more TV stations, ranging from CNN to Fox to even the Jerry Springer radio show. So over the last 30 years, had a lot of fun trying to educate people as they're trying to fly, give them a few travel tips, things to make their travels a little bit more stress-free, and continue to this day, and I love doing it.
Now, when you said you were in management, what was your role? What was your capacity back in the day?
Back in the day, I was in charge of various stations. I would oversee one or two stations at a time, a general manager. And I started my career in Monroe, Louisiana in October of 81 and went from there, traveling and working in various cities, including Detroit, Minneapolis, Cincinnati, Memphis, and then back to Dayton, Ohio, which was the place I've been trying to get to. It's a lot like the military. The airlines would move you around every so often. You never seem to get comfortable in any given spot before they would move you on to the next assignment.
Last time you were on, it was December. So just overall, the big difference right now between air travel today and air travel in December.
Well, you know, when you and I talked last, we were seeing some travel numbers that were, you know, 800,000 a day were flying and 600,000 a day were flying. And we saw some numbers that varied wildly. And when back then we were comparing what the norm was, which was over 2 million people a day flying, it was obvious that we had a long way to go to get back to what would be considered normal. Because prior to the pandemic, we'd have 2.2 or 3 million, 2.5 million a day that were being screened by the TSA. That was an average thing. And of course, the pandemic hit, and we got down to a point April of last year where we had a total of 87,000 people that were screened in one day of flying on a Tuesday in April. That was our low mark. And we've slowly been building it up from there. And the last numbers that the TSA has given us is the number of people they screened on July 6th, which would have been yesterday. They had 1,889,911 people screened, which sounds like a lot, and it is. But when you reference what we were doing 2 years ago, which was the last real comparison for the sake of perception, we have the 2.5 million that were screened 2 years ago. So we still have a ways to go to get back to what we would consider to be normal, but we are certainly headed in that direction, and this busier summer travel season is certainly helping.
What do you suppose was the biggest factor that really cut into the air travel? Meaning, was it the fear of being in that closed space? Was it fear of being stuck overseas, not being able to get home? Was it just restrictions of other countries? I mean, what do you think it was?
A lot of it had to do with the uncertainty of not knowing what was going on and what was not. Remember, it was February of last year when Dr. Fauci and others came out and told the airline industry, look, don't worry about the coronavirus. It's not going to make it to the United States. They also said at the same time, Dr. Fauci, don't worry about wearing masks. They're not effective. So when you started to hear those things change, wait a minute, we now know that the coronavirus is in the United States. Oh, and yep, now you have to wear not one, maybe two masks. I mean, there were so many different conflicting messages that a lot of people just threw up their hands and said, look, until I've got a pretty good idea of what's going on, I'm just not going to travel. And, of course, there were some people worried about traveling in an aircraft. And airlines said, look, we're going to block the middle seat, which was a laughable event. Because I'm thinking, wait a minute, you're going to block the middle seats on all the middle planes, middle seats on all of your aircraft, and you're going to stand before the microphone like you care and you're doing something grand. Look, there's only 19 people flying. you could block two seats in every row and it wouldn't matter. But the idea was that they were going to help maintain social distancing, which the last time I checked, it was defined as 6 feet of distance. Well, if you and I are seated in the aisle and window seat of a particular row, I don't think that middle seat is 6 feet across. It's not. So, and if you and I are sitting on opposing aisles, we're a lot closer than 6 feet apart. So some people said, look, I'm just not comfortable being stuck inside of an aircraft with the concerns as they were. And the thought was when the vaccine came out, when it was available, when people opted to take it, we would start to see the travel numbers grow. And fortunately for us, the vaccine became available late last year. We saw more people vaccinated as we were going into the spring, which kind of led into the busier summer travel season. And the timing was pretty good for airlines to take advantage of it. Now, there's two airlines that have really dropped the ball on their foot big time, and that's American Airlines and Southwest. They made the decision in March going into April that they were going to bring the airplanes that they had on the sidelines back into service. They made an announcement and made a big deal of it and said, look, we see the advance numbers for summer. They're going to be strong. We want to make sure that we're ready. So we're bringing all the airplanes we parked back into service. And they started making reservations for all those flights of using all those aircraft. And the pilots for American Airlines said, wait a minute. We have a lot of people on the sidelines that have to be brought back, American Airlines pilots. But before you can go from the couch to the cockpit, you have to go through a brief kind of not retraining because these pilots haven't forgot what they needed to do to fly, but the FAA requires, and rightfully so, a brief orientation that they go through before they return to the flight deck. And the problem is there's only so many pilots that can go through these limited number of facilities in the course of a month. So American and Southwest apparently didn't do the math because it became real clear soon that, we're not going to have enough time from April until the 1st of June to have all these pilots come back to fly all these airplanes that have been brought back. American Airlines, since the beginning of June, have been canceling 50 to 80 flights a day due to a lack of pilots. And it's not because, oh, my gosh, there's a hiring problem. I guess it's extending to airlines. No, they just didn't bring back their pilots soon enough. And I think Southwest still has 800 or 900 pilots. They still have to get through their training. So as a result, these two airlines have had so many flight cancellations. It's just been crazy. So hopefully within the next few weeks, they're going to be okay. But now that we passed July 4th and the, quote, unofficial halfway point to summer, they've really dropped the ball and lost out on a great deal of revenue they could have had they simply started the training process of getting those pilots back sooner.
Talking to Jay Ratliff this morning. He's an aviation expert. What are some of the forever effects, in your opinion, that COVID is going to have on air travel? Because it will have some kind of forever effects.
I wish I could say the length at which airlines clean airplanes. I can't say that because I know airlines and I know the way they do things. And unfortunately, they went from sanitizing the aircraft between every turn and then it's going to be, well, we're going to sanitize it every day. And then it's going to soon be, we're going to sanitize it once a week. It's just, that is something I wish would happen, but it's not. And if you ever saw my wife and I fly, one of the things that we would do before the pandemic is we'd sit down, we'd grab a little Clorox wipe, and we'd wipe off the tray table, the entertainment screens, as well as the armrest in the headrest behind us. Not because I'm a germaphobe, just because I know how non-clean some of these things are. And you couldn't pay me money to reach into that seat back pocket because some of those in-flight magazines had more germs than the lavatory floor. So to me, it was a matter of, okay, I know these things aren't really cleaned as much as I would like, so I'm going to do a little bit of cleaning myself. So one of the other things that I think that's going to happen as we continue is that airlines are going to quickly get back to business as usual, and they're going to forgo a lot of the things that they did before. During the pandemic, they were boarding in small numbers, only a few at a time. That's gone. They're now herding us in like cattle as they did before. They were blocking the middle seats, which, of course, is no longer the case. They're now selling every seat on every airplane that they can. So a lot of things that were pre-pandemic and during the pandemic have kind of started to go away. And sadly, I don't think a lot of those things are going to stick around because of the costs that are involved. And airlines that lost collectively $128 billion last year around the world, and this year they're on pace to lose about $48 billion, they're not really in a position where they can spend a lot of extra money doing a lot of extra things. So they're hopefully going to do more things as far as cleaning, but the bottom line is don't trust them. And when you fly, do your own little bit of sanitization around your aircraft as far as your seat, so that at least the screen and the armrest and the tray table especially, you can wipe down to make sure that it's clean as it needs to be before you use it.
What about, and I did hear you talk about this on a couple of occasions, business travelers, for example, who, and I should say companies who've discovered, you know, we really don't have to spend the money to send so-and-so here and so-and-so there. We can do it all here. What about stuff like that?
Now, that's an excellent point, because that goes back to your question of is there going to be any changes to aviation? And I certainly think that we've done it. Now, during the pandemic, a phrase that would drive me out of my mind was when somebody said, well, this is the new normal, like it was going to be around forever. And I'm like, look, as soon as the pandemic gets back, we're going to get back to doing business as usual. But the one thing that we saw very quickly is that businesses that were very hesitant to embrace technology before the pandemic, as far as the Zoom conference calls, video conferencing, the things you reference, you couldn't get some of those old farts that, you know, were running business to change anything they did because they really didn't like technology. Well, they were forced to. Look, either you change, you adapt, or you die. So a lot of these businesses were forced to start to change what they did. And they started using, reluctantly, this video conferencing concept. And they found out, well, it's not as complicated as we thought. It's actually pretty cheap. And you know what? It's effective. So a lot of these businesses are saying, my gosh, we used to spend so much money, pressing flesh, so to speak, where we'd send all these people around the country to visit face-to-face with various people. We still need to do that somewhat, but not nearly to the degree at which we did. And when we're looking at the travel numbers today that are flying, like the 1.9 million or so that flew yesterday, we're seeing a lot more leisure travelers than we are corporate. And when you understand the way the airline industry works, airlines make 70% of their money, the bottom line, 70% from the corporate travelers, those men and women that fly all the time. If those individuals aren't coming back in mass, and believe me, they are not, then airlines are forced with, how do we make up for this lost revenue? The only way they can do it is increase fees and increase the airfares for those that are traveling, which means on the leisure side of things, they're going to start to increase, as they've already done, some of the domestic leisure airfares considerably, which means those of us that are savvy consumers, the best way to fight back is to remember that you can buy many of your airline tickets 10, 11 and a half months in advance. People are already planning next year's spring break, next year's Thanksgiving, this year's Thanksgiving, end of year holidays, certainly Thanksgiving. They're already buying tickets well in advance, locking in a lot of those super low fares. They're also buying the trip cancellation insurance, a few bucks to protect yourself. Believe me, that's needed. So as a result, what's taking place is that we're kind of, you know, making sure our airfares are locked in so that if the airlines do jack up the prices, we can sit back and relax because we already have the super-duper low-cost fare locked in, and we're okay.
I can understand raising fees. I totally get that. But could there be a backlash? And this is what I'm talking about. We as consumers have seen that these airlines can survive with about three people flying a day. So I don't know where they got this surplus to survive all that time. But can we say, okay, well, then you know what? Hopefully that's going to be part of your answer. But can't a consumer say, you know, look, you are flying at, you know, one quarter capacity and you're still in business, so don't you be raising my fees. Anyway, go.
Well, remember, the airlines got not one, not two, but three rounds of stimulus money from the government.
Okay.
$52 billion. And I remember when then-President Trump was in office, they gave out the first round of $15, $18 billion. I can't remember what it was. And the president said, it's a very good likelihood the airline industry is going to need more than this because this is a long-term thing. And he says, before we give them the second batch, we need to reach a deal with them so that we get something in return. We'll give you this much money, 70% of which does not need to be repaid, but you need to give us something. In other words, a 50% discount on future travel for federal employees for X amount of time. He was laughed like he was the biggest idiot in the world, like most of the time when he did things. But it was a perfectly logical business thought, because that's what businesses do. If I have a business in Chicago, I go to United American and say, look, I have this many people flying every week. Give me a discount, and we'll give you all of our business. That type of thing happens all the time. But unfortunately, we as a country did not ask the airlines for any sort of something in return. And when you try to negotiate from a position of strength, my gosh, you talk about a position of strength. We had it. But we asked for nothing in return. So we gave them three rounds of stimulus money, $52 billion, and 70% of which it doesn't have to be repaid, and we didn't ask for anything in return. We didn't ask for airfares to be locked in for any length of time. We didn't ask for increased customer service. We didn't ask for anything. So as a result, when airlines are now seeing 90% of their planes filled, there's zero incentive for them to ever change the way they're doing anything, which drives me out of my mind because I'm thinking, my gosh, here we go again. And I tell you, there's been a lot of people that have contacted me from across the country, a lot of media outlets, and the analyst or host or interviewer says, Jay, I can't believe, I am shocked that airlines would actually raise airfares after all we gave them. And my response is, I'm shocked, you're shocked, because the airlines do that. This is what they always do. That's what they're going to continue to do. And they don't care what we gave them. They're going to continue to herd us in like cattle, give us the lowest levels of customer service possible. And as long as we keep flying, there's no incentive for them to change. So we no longer enjoy travel. We endure it.
Jay, where can people go to find out more about you, find out more about your tips?
JayRatliff.com is the easiest way, JayRatliff.com. Easiest way to get me. That's also my business website. I teach people how to trade stocks, but I've been an aviation and stock market analyst now for going on 30 years. And if there's any aviation-related questions, reach out to me, and just as quickly as my business schedule will allow, I'll certainly respond. And I'll end with this one quick bit. If you have a complaint against an airline, consider not only filing the complaint with the airline, which may go nowhere, go to DOT.gov. This is the Department of Transportation website. And when you go to DOT.gov, in the search box, put in airline complaint, and it brings up a very quick and easy online complaint form that you can fill out. Now when you issue that complaint, the airline cannot ignore it because the DOT goes to the airline on our behalf, says we have this complaint, we need you to respond within 30 days, and oh, by the way, copy us in so we know what's going on. And airlines hate DOT complaints because it forces them to do more work. So if we want airlines to do a better job, when we have a complaint, I don't care if it's current or past, go to DOT.gov, issue that complaint there, and collectively, who knows, maybe we could get the airlines to treat us better.
In other words, we're going to go to the principal. This is it.
You got it. Absolutely. But, you know, the maddening thing to me is the government looks at the DOT ratings on the number of complaints as their barometer to tell us how well the airlines are doing from a customer service standpoint. Now, I'm the kid in the back of the class wildly waving my hand saying, wait a minute, 98% of the public doesn't even know they can complain through the DOT website. Why in the world are we using that as our measurement on how airlines are doing? But that's what they do. So look, the more people that we can get going to DOT.gov and filing those complaints, the better chance we have as consumers of getting treated a little bit better by the airlines.
Jay, appreciate you being on. We will definitely do it again. You take care.
My pleasure, my friend. Thank you.